Hello. Today in the fireside room of Holden Village, David Hamilton will be speaking on using my new communication skills. So let's listen in on David Hamilton.
Series that I'm doing, and this is the fourth session in the series, and you can catch the others next week because I'll be here again. This is strengthening family relationships through anger management and communication. And so what I'm going to do is review very quickly what it took us 3 days to get through so far. And this is the fourth day. But that review will allow you to kind of take off and do what we're going to do today. Plus, I have some other thoughts about what I might do for the end here. I haven't quite figured it out yet. But that's okay. I always do that. But before I go, before I move along, I'd like to just start out with reading a few verses out of Ephesians here, and this is chapter 4, verse 26. It starts out, "Be ye angry and sin not, let not the sun go down upon your wrath." Probably most of us have heard that before, and it's, try not to go to bed angry, try to get rid of your anger, try to work through it rather than let it build up and become a problem. Then it goes on a little bit later here at 29. "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby ye are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And ye be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." And so with that kind of a theme, I'd like to just briefly review what we did the last couple of last three sessions, and then we'll move on from there. Now, the first two sessions dealt with our anger management plan. And the first step in that plan is recognizing the physical signs of anger that are appropriate for you, okay? And some of the ones that we talked about and went through were, clenched fist, real tight jaw. A lot of people get muscle tension all over the body. Mine is particularly up in my back or my neck. Some people get it up here in their forehead. They get headaches either in the forehead or in the back. Some people squint their eyes. What else? Clenched fist, I think I mentioned. Tight stomach. Or a rumbling in the stomach. Some people even feel the gastric juices really acting up. And some people even swallow the back. So it really depends on your own sort of response to anger as to how it comes about. By the way, let me back up too. When we did talk about the definition of anger, and usually a lot of times people have sort of a negative connotation of what anger is all about. But anger is just simply an emotion. It's neither good nor bad. In fact, there can be some good aspects to it and some bad aspect to it as well. It's not expressed appropriately. And so we talked about that and kind of went through some things about that and looked at the definition of anger. So that, remember, anger is an emotion, and it's not necessarily a negative one. It's one that we all have, and even Christ was angry a number of times. You remember when he came into the temple and saw the people selling all their wares and selling doves and I think it was lambs and for sacrifice and so on. He got angry and overturned all the tables and kicked them out. And so even he was had anger, and there's a lot of references in the Bible about anger too. Okay, so first of all, the first step is recognizing your physical signs. We mentioned a few of those. Know your buttons. What I mean by buttons is, like, you can call them triggers, you can call them buttons, you can call them antecedents. Antecedents are what happens before the behavior. In other words, what happens before you get angry? What are the things that set you off? And we listed a whole bunch of buttons. I mean, we must have had at least 40 of them. But some of those, it might include a bad driver pulling out in front of you, somebody calling you a name, put downs. You could think of lying, stealing, cheating. For me, one of mine is fighting. My kids fight, boom, I lose it. You know, it's that. And I have to go through my anger management plan when my kids fight. And no, we can't do that. Anyway, they're growing up now, so they don't fight anymore.
That's cool.
But anyway, knowing your buttons is real important, and we did quite an exercise on that. That was a lot of fun. And then we talked about owning your buttons, okay? One of the typical things that kids do when I work with kids on this kind of stuff is they'll say, it wasn't my fault that I got angry and punched him out. He called me a name. It's his fault. And that's not owning your button, okay? That's saying, just because somebody else ticked me off, it's okay that I responded, you know, with violence. And what we try to teach kids is that no matter what your button is, okay, whether it's name calling or if it's lying or stealing or whatever, or somebody putting you down or rumors, that you've got to own your own buttons, that those are your personal things that set you off. And for you to be responsible, you have to be responsible for those buttons. Otherwise, it's going to get you in more trouble. So we talk about owning buttons. Then we started talking about the actual plan. Now we're going to act with a plan. Already recognized all the things. We know where they are. We want to act with a plan and not react with anger. Okay. And then we talk about short-term anger reducers, and we list a whole bunch of those. The typical ones that we teach in some of the in the Goldstein stuff that I use is a deep breath or several deep breaths. Remember, short-term anger reducer is from 0 to 30 seconds. The first 0 to 30 seconds when anger hits you, boom. Okay, I'm losing it. I can feel the physical sign. Somebody pushed a button. Now what am I going to do? Okay. And for me, what's really good is taking a deep breath. All right. So one of the first ones is taking a deep breath, counting backwards to 20. Why do we count backwards from 20 rather than forward?
Takes
more time, and it's easier. I mean, go one is around 10, man, boom. You know, and you're still angry. But if you count backwards to 20, it takes longer, it takes more time to get there. Maybe cool down, but then you may not. And then we'll get to long-term anger reducers if you're not cooled down. Another one is pleasant imagery, thinking about pleasant scenes. And there's, those are the three main ones we teach, but then people always have lots more, you know, like taking a drink of water, swallowing, turning away, walking away, lots of different things you can do. Okay, short-term anger reducers. Then we have people commit to a short-term anger reducer. Which one are you going to use for you? All right, write it down. Put that down on a piece of paper, and then we talk about long-term anger reducers. Okay, let's say you're taking a deep breath, and whatever happened, let's say my daughter lied to me about her homework, I still can't talk to her about it without yelling and screaming and feeling badly about the way I handled it. So I'm going to say, look, I can't talk to you right now, I'll talk to you later. And I go off and try to perform one of my long-term anger reducers. And that can be anything like listen to music, take a walk, go for a run, exercise, whatever. What do you like about it? Go run around the house. I even had one kid that said, yeah, every time I got mad, I'd go run around the house. Well, he's an attention deficit disorder kid, and he got mad a lot, and they had this trail around his house, worn in the grass. And he was one of the best runners in high school, by the way, too. Nobody could beat him on the track. So anyway, he had a good long-term anger reducer. Let's see. Okay, but there's others too. There's lots of them, and people made a list of those. So we talked about anger. We had a plan put together. This is took two sessions, and we'll be doing that Monday and Tuesday too. And then we got into communication last night. And the first part of communication is listening. We have to be able to listen to what a person is saying before we can respond to it. Okay. And then, of course, the second part is expressing yourself. And in listening, we pick up more information, actually, from nonverbal cues for most of the time. The research shows that you pick up about 75% of what the person is telling you through their nonverbal cues. You know, what would this be if I were talking to you as a nonverbal cue? Any guesses?
Kind of guarded.
Yeah, closed, kind of. Not really open to the conversation. Kind of cold. What would this be? More open and relaxed, ready to listen, perhaps. That's important. Okay, so nonverbal cues. And then there's the verbal stuff. And one of the real common techniques that people teach are active listening. And by active listening, I mean listening to the content of what, not only the content of what the person is saying, but the feelings behind what they're saying. By the way, I have some handouts on that too. So you can follow along with it. So active listening is try to figure out what the person is saying in terms of the emotional stuff that's going on. Let's say a kid comes home and, you know, he's ranting and raving and he's angry. Let's say he's in high school. He's ranting and raving and he's angry. And see if you can pick out the emotion that what I'll do is I'll just role play it for you. But see if you can pick out the emotion that I'm feeling. And just raise your hand right away as soon as you think you got it, okay?
What?
Indecision. It is indecision right now. But I'm going to rattle on. Okay. Doggone, you wouldn't believe what happened at school today. I got an F in this history test. I can't believe it. That stupid professor, he's so dumb. I was so upset. I just don't know. I think he's such a jerk. I'm going to have to drop this class.
He's transferred.
It's what?
It's a transfer.
What's the feeling, though, that I'm expressing right now?
You're saying, oh, frustration.
Sounds like you're frustrated.
Yeah,
I'm frustrated. You know this guy? He just, such a jerk. I thought he said the test was over chapter 23 and 24, and it's really over 22 and 21. And I blew it. I mean, I went to that test, and I thought I had it all done, and I studied last night, and I stayed up late, and I, you know, took the test, and then went in, and I just totally blew it, man. I'm so bummed. Well, I don't know. Maybe what I should do is go talk to him about it and let him know what I did. Maybe he'll let me take it over. Yeah, I think I'll try that. But see, just by listening, and by maybe feeding a little bit of stuff back to me, I went from dropping that class to going to solve the problem, okay? And if you can stay, like, uninvolved and not try to say to the kid, well, why don't you go talk to him? Well, he's a jerk. I'm not going to go talk to him. And then you've written him off, right? And that's it, you know? And if you just stay with the frustration and the anger, okay, out of the frustration, and say, you know, then I'm not going to work it through. And I'm just going to say, I was a jerk. I don't want to talk about it. I dropped the class. It's too late. I blew it already. On and on. But if you just listen to me and let me vent and get through it. And actually, I was more angry at myself. Yeah. Because somehow I didn't pick up the right chapters that the test was in. And so again, this allows for whoever you're talking to keep the problem and try to work it through. But when you try to take over problems, say, this is the way you should do it, and this is how it should happen, and this is what should... A lot of times, people, and especially in the business that I'm in, listening to people as a psychologist, if I try to give advice to people, they'll go out and try it, and of course blow it, and come back and say, oh, it didn't work, now what am I going to do? Now what should I do? And then the problem's on me, and then I have to keep giving them advice. But you know, everybody's different. Everybody has their own way of solving problems. And for me, I might have my own way of solving a particular problem, but it doesn't work for somebody else because it's not them. So again, if you just listen to them and say, well, yeah, you know, and follow their emotion and just listen to them, they a lot of times will come up with their own solution. Now, some problems there are no solutions to it, but by listening to them, you're going to keep tuned in with them. They're going to know you understand. They're going to know you empathize, you sympathize, you're there for them. And it kind of helps, you know, bring down that emotional distraught level just by having somebody to listen to. So that's what active listening is all about. It allows the other person to solve the problem, allows them to feel like they're being heard, allows them to kind of get rid of or kind of vent some of the feelings that they're having. So yeah, that was good. I was frustrated. But I was also angry. But I was angry at myself. Not so much the professor. I was just, you're right, I was transferring anger onto him. But it was because I goofed up and didn't hear it right. Kids will do that too. And so, adults, the jerk, pulled out in front of them. Okay, that's a little bit about active listening. And then what we did yesterday is we practiced that a little bit. And so I had them just purely practice active listening. And we're going to do that again today too. Okay, now the next part then is expressing yourself. And the way it's taught, most communication courses is through what's called the I message. And this is what an I message is all about. I feel disappointed when, and then you specify the behavior. I feel disappointed when I find peanut butter sandwiches moldy under your bed when you said you cleaned the room. And that's the reason. Now what they found is, in research, is that you can send an iMessage up to here for younger kids, and they'll respond, they'll go clean the room, or they'll go pick up that moldy sandwich and finish cleaning up the room the way you wanted it to in the first place. But with teenagers, you have to give them a good reason why, a lot of the times. And so the reason might be, and it really grosses me out that I had to do that. Or, you could be growing deadly bacteria under your bed. You're going to die.
Get the ground squirrels in there.
What's that?
Get the ground squirrels in there.
And mice, yeah, that's what we have here, I know. The mice will come and get you, pack you away. Anyway, an I message is expressing how you feel about something. And for a person, the best way to communicate your feeling towards somebody is through an I message. Because you're stating a feeling first, okay? People can't argue with how you feel, can they? If you have a certain feeling, like you're upset or you're frustrated or you're disappointed, they can't say, oh, that's wrong. You can't do that. That can't be true. So when you state a feeling,
we do that with kids. You can't be sad. Grandma's coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's the message that sent to them?
You don't know anything. You don't know what you're feeling.
Yeah, that's not a right feeling to have. Yeah. It's not a good feeling to have. And it's okay to feel sad. And you could say, it seems like you feel sad, rather than say, it seems like you feel sad, but you shouldn't because grandma's coming. if you just said, it seems like you feel sad, who knows why, but kids. But getting back to the iMessage though, remember you got a feeling in there, you got a feeling statement, and then specify the behavior. Let me talk about this for just a second, because this is really important. We can blow our iMessage, okay? We can turn the person off like that if we don't be specific about the behavior. For example, say my daughter didn't pick up that sandwich under her bed and left a few things lying around or something. I'll say, I'm really disappointed. You're so irresponsible because you left that sandwich. And, irresponsible? Wait a minute. That's a judgment statement, okay? But if I said, I'm really disappointed in you. I found this moldy sandwich under your bed. I thought you cleaned your room. Come on. But if you get really specific, then they can't, it's better because then they won't turn off. You can't have judgment statements like irresponsible or you're a liar, okay? But if you said, I'm really bummed out, really disappointed and angry at you that you lied to me about your homework. I see that you still had four math problems to do and you didn't get it done. And that's different than saying you're always a liar or you're just a liar. So you're real specific about the behavior. Okay. Now, there's a couple conditions for an iMessage to really work and change behavior. And that is, you've got to have a relationship with someone. I mean, if somebody stepped in line in front of you in Safeway and you said, I feel kind of You know, like, you don't respect me when you step in line in front of me like that, and I'm just as much in a hurry as you are. Screw you. I don't care. You know, I mean, they don't. So you've got to have a relationship with somebody before they respond to.
No handle.
Yeah, before they can respond to an iMessage, right? And it doesn't mean they'll always respond to it. It doesn't mean that just because you're saying you don't like a specific behavior and bums you out, or that they're always going to change it right away. And then there's other things you can do beyond that if it doesn't change. Eventually. Okay. Anyway, any questions on either of these?
I'm just thinking when you said you had to have a relationship, that's very, very important when you, especially in this day and age. We had two situations within about a 2 or 3 week period in Western Montana where guns were pulled on people because one was flicking their headlights in the rear view mirror, and another one was not wanting to yield when the lanes went from 2 to 1. In both situations, one a gun was pulled, and the other one the threat of a gun was pulled, but they stopped the car and pulled the driver out and beat him up. So today is much different from what it was years ago. This is a very dangerous thing, and much of what you said here, if you don't have the relationship, or if you're among strangers, if somebody cuts in line, somebody wants to get past you on the highway, let them do it, and don't say a word.
That's
scary.
Yeah,
really scary.
You know, you talk about anger management. They're acting. They're reacting.
Yeah.
Not acting with a plan at all. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that in Missoula?
One was in Missoula, and one was at Como Lake in the Bitterroot.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Como Lake. That's a sideboard.
It was a Sunday evening when there's, you know, I don't know if you know Como Lake,
yeah.
Saturdays and Sundays, it's wild. You know, motorboaters and parties and everything like that.
Yeah.
And these two cars were coming down, and one guy wanted to get past the other one, and he allowed him to go by, but the car that wanted to go by had a headlight, bright beams on. So as soon as he got by, the car that he passed put the bright lights on, they jammed on the brakes, went back, hauled the driver out and beat him to a pulp. But fortunately, they got him because the girlfriend was sitting there with a cellular telephone, phoning the sheriff as this was going on. But, you know, this is...
Yeah, I know. There's a lot
don't of... Don't react to strangers.
Yeah, they have gun racks and cellular phones.
Yeah. Okay, just bring you up to date. We're just reviewing. We just got through the review of communication stuff and all that. Okay, now, any other questions on this stuff? Any other thoughts? It sounds simple, but it's a lot harder to do. And so to get it, and remember, you know, anytime you practice a new behavior or a new technique or a new whatever, it always seems kind of stilted, and it seems kind of foreign, and it seems really like it's not a part of you. And it's true, it's not. And it is hard to actually build that behavior. But the more and more practice you get at it, the easier it'll feel, and the better you'll be able to do it when you're in a situation where you need to do something like this, and or when you have an opportunity to do it, let's put it that way. And so part of when I teach these kinds of things, part of it is always practice, because if you don't practice it, it'll never happen. And it seems kind of dumb, it seems stilted, and it's a lot harder than what it sounds. I mean, I've given you the stem words, and I've given you part of the sentence here. And then when you actually start trying to do it, you kind of stumble over your words and all that kind of stuff. So it's okay, while we're practicing, to keep this little cheat sheet in front of you, and hold it right there. If you're like me, I have to hold it out here, not the glasses. And keep it right there so it's easier to do. Let's see. Okay, so what we're going to do today is we're going to break up into just groups of two people, and I won't have anybody together that knows each other. That's important. She's laughing at me.
Yeah, it is important.
because a lot of times what's already happened, okay, in terms of communication, is in families and spouses, friends, whatever, there's already patterns that are built up. And if you try to use these things when the patterns are already there and buttons being pushed, boom, you're right back into the old patterns, just like that, without even thinking about it. So what we're going to do is we're going to pair you up with a stranger, somebody you don't know, so you can actually practice on this and not already have an established communication pattern. So we'll do that. Now, the other thing, since part of our sessions dealt with anger and anger management, maybe what you can do for the listening part of it, I'll have you be a listener for 3 minutes, and you can listen to the other person who's going to talk about maybe something that involved when they're angry about something, okay? And then you can just be the listener and feedback what they're saying to you about their emotions or what they're feeling, all right? Or if it doesn't seem like, if the person's just rattling on, like sometimes I'll just rattle on and on and on and on, and there's no time to interrupt, that's okay. You can just stay there and be the nonverbal listener. Good eye contact, shake your head, yeah, understand, kind of stuff. Okay, then I'll have you switch, and then the other person will talk for 3 minutes, again, going back to something that made them angry in the past. And you don't have to share anything real intimate, but just something that you remember. It's always hard sometimes to come up with them too. Okay, then the second part, and I'll stop after the listening practice and get some feedback from you on how it felt and how it went and what were some hard parts and things like that and what felt good. And then the second part then we'll have you send some eye messages about when you were upset about something and remember the stems, and you can use your cheat sheet. And we'll do that. Well, let's see. What I could do, maybe this is what I'll do when we get to this part. I'll give you the scenarios for the eye messages on this one, okay? Because I have a bunch of just off the top. And then we can go with that. Okay. All right, so I'm going to pair you up, and I think looks like these three folks are together. Are you with them, too?
Not with anybody.
Not with anybody. All right. So why don't you pair up with her, and then you two can pair up.
Pardon? I
can see if I'm having
a minute. She has to go cut pizza.
Oh, cut pizza. I know it's hard to cut it off, but stop a second if you want. No, I'll cut you off right in the middle of something. That always happens when we stop these things and put time limits on. Let me give you some quick feedback, and then you give me feedback. Some of the listening styles, I saw people leaning forward, which was a good listening technique. I saw people really good eye contact, watching the other person, and reflecting some back what they said, as far as paraphrasing or just saying some of the emotions that they're having. And the other thing I noticed too is it's hard to keep it pure sometimes. I heard people questioning the other person, making comments.
I was trying to let them keep going, and when 3 minutes were up.
I know. Let's see. So that's pretty much what I noticed. I noticed some sympathy statements, too, occasionally.
Sympathy statements.
And it's really, when you're just trying to act purely active listening, it's really hard. Because you want to be able to sympathize, maybe throw some advice in, say, yeah, that happened to me one time. Empathize, that's empathizing. Yeah, that happened to me too. Boy, yeah, I really upset about that. So,
what do you say about empathizing and doing that, David? It's not.
Well, again, when you teach a technique, it's really hard to keep it pure. But remember, if you can just keep it as pure as you can, then you're going to allow that person to kind of get done with a train ride. Okay, this one professor I had called it the great train ride. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you listen to people or kids or anybody, they'll start on this train ride of just expressing their feelings and telling you about some situation, and it will lead to something else, and lead to something else, and they'll finally get down to what
was really bothering. So if you start cutting them off and you know, offering advice and trying to solve each problem as it comes up, you're not going to get to the end of the great train ride. And so that's why I'm saying it's really important to try to stay as pure as you can. Empathizing, no problem. It's a bummer. I can see you're really upset about that.
Well, my thought on when you go in and say, well, I know how you feel because that happened to me, and proceed, you can cut the other person off, because that person who's expressing himself doesn't want to hear about your problems.
Right.
He or she wants to talk about his.
Yeah, and you know, and you can empathize without doing that.
Yeah.
You can say, yeah, I know, that's a real bummer. I've had that happen. Yeah, I can see it really upset you. That's empathizing.
Yeah.
Okay, feedback now from how it felt for you. How was it? Was it hard?
She must be a good listener, because I didn't think I wanted to do this. But it was pretty easy.
It's easy to talk, and it's easy to listen to you guys. You know, you all seem to be doing that pretty well. Okay, let's switch now and go to iMessage. That's a little bit harder. And so what I'm going to try to do is structure it for you a little bit by giving you some scenarios. I already did the messy room thing with the kid. Okay, let's say, remember, you're going to have to get your cheat sheet out, and you have to put it in this format.
Peanut butter on the plate for the dish team.
Okay, you already came up with it. Peanut butter on the plates. But see, a lot of people that are new here
they don't put peanut butter on the plates.
Let's put her on the spot. You make up an iMessage for that. I feel.
Okay, as a wait try, I feel upset when people put their peanut butter on the plates instead of on the bread, because then the plate goes through the dish team, through the Hobart, and back into those big stacks, and they're not clean. We try to go to set tables, and we come out with dirty plates. We've got to send back through a dish team or have them washed again.
Well, our dish team always catches those before they go back to the wait truck.
I don't buy that.
She's still upset.
I'm not pointing out any dish team. I'm faulting the people who put it on the plate to begin with.
But you know, so you're upset because it makes more work for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it makes more work. Okay.
Okay. And sure.
That's fine. I get upset when a crew of Mavericks are up there waiting for the truck and the bus to pull up, and we're unloading the luggage and placing it neatly on the loading dock, and the incoming guests have swarmed over the pile like ants and are in our way and preventing us from unloading the luggage and placing it in neat piles so that later the guests can come in and they get in the way.
Okay. So you get frustrated?
We get frustrated because we have a system going, and the system, it breaks down when somebody is milling around in the middle trying to take their luggage out of the pile as you're moving it around.
Okay.
Again, it sounds like it's making more work for you.
It definitely.
Goodness, right.
Don't want to give more work to these volunteers.
Did you hear that? She did. That's very good. How about this? Somebody can grab this one. Let's say one of your best friends has walked in your house and tracked across your kitchen floor with muddy shoes.
Best friend. You might.
Past tense.
Well, best friend, I would be free to go. I'll pick a name, Kay. Kay, look at that! Look at what you're doing! You know, I would just react like that. But if it wasn't a best friend, because...
Say it's a neighbor that you've only known, you've only had a few interactions with.
Okay, that changes it a lot.
you can let go of it, your best friend.
We give each other a hard time.
She'll listen to you and not be offended by your, hey, stupid. Okay, let's say it was a... No, let's have somebody else do it. Let's say it was somebody else.
I wouldn't say anything to anybody.
No, come on.
I really wouldn't.
Well, you probably
would.
I would
ignore it. I let him go away, and then I clean it up.
There's tar on the boots, and he keeps stepping.
Oh, tar. Okay.
And he's over the carpet.
He
keeps walking.
Almost to the carpet. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't talk about that feeling. Just tell him to cut it out.
Stop.
Don't move. Put a chair on him, make a chair, take a shower.
No, come on. This is just a... Just a way to get you.
Okay.
We had a bet.
Now practice doing it with an I message. Okay, then you might have to back up and know your buttons.
I should have brought that in the platform.
Most adults notice when they've got tar on their shoes and they're walking in someone's house. Apparently, it's the kids.
Oh, the kids.
Yeah, it's not as hard as dog
adults.
Yeah. There's another one.
But it's kitchen hard.
No, wait,
how about something more realistic? I mean,
all right.
How about the kids pouring Kool-Aid and they are doing it carelessly, just standing in front of the refrigerator, just pouring the
grape Kool-Aid.
It's grape Kool-Aid.
On your white,
spilling on your
white. Kool-Aid. Okay, you go for that.
See, I have a hard time getting in touch. Do I feel angry? Do I feel frustrated? You know, I'm not sure how exactly I feel.
Let me go get the blackboard in your room. You want to help me haul it in real quick? Because this will help clarify that.
It's terrible.
We've done this exercise before. One of those are always the groups I have a hard time with. Because it always makes you feel angry.
Sorry, somebody's in there.
Because it's just too simple. There are so many other synonyms for angry.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, what I was about to do is run in here and get a blackboard that that showed what kind of part of the exercise that we did yesterday that I didn't have time to cover today. But anger is really a secondary emotion, okay? There's primary emotions that always happen before you get angry. For example, you get worry, you fear. You know, the example is the kid that stays out an hour after the curfew. What do you do for an hour? You worry. And then when they walk through the door, what do? Boom, blast them. Okay, and so anger is a secondary emotion. So there's always primary emotions that happen before: disappointment, frustration, loneliness, fear, jealousy, lack of respect. Sometimes can lead to anger, and you know that same thing when you know, wait, I get upset. You know when you pour the Kool-Aid out like that because if it spills on the floor, then I have to clean it up. What about the type of person, and I might even be talking about myself, who doesn't get angry about things that they probably should? When things happen that others say, well, you know, and I show no anger, and almost they get mad at me because I didn't get angry about what happened. Well, there's people have different tolerances, and you know, whenever you look at anger, you've got the hothead out here, and then you've got, you know, the person that's so laid back that, you know, the only thing that ever gets them upset is, you know, it's rare. And so, you know, there's different tolerances in terms of how people tolerate things. So I wouldn't say that you don't get angry. That does kind of hit a chord, though. There's one lady that I knew, I still know her, she's a good friend up in Fairbanks, that said to me, prior to her divorce, a couple, 8 years ago, she said, I never get angry. I went, boing, red flag, something wrong here. No, and I didn't say anything. because I didn't know her all that well. But as she was proceeding through her divorce and I was doing some counseling with her, then her anger started to show up. And then it just, you know, went from, I mean, out here, which is zero, to up here for a while. And then it finally came back to a point where she could still express it and deal with it and work it through. And so it's like once she let go of it and realized it, it just went the other extreme. But then she was in an abusive relationship where she couldn't get anger. Otherwise, the guy would say.
I was trying to think for the last 10 minutes, what makes me angry? And that's one of the things. We work in a food bank, and we work with a lot of different types of people, and we work with different agencies. And I very seldom get angry at something personal or in an interpersonal relationship, but what makes me angry more than anything else is that type of abuse.
Sure.
When I listen to a woman sitting in the food bank in tears, picking up the food and saying, and you can see the bruises and she's trying to avoid it, and we're talking casually and it comes up that her husband had beat her, I get so angry, but I can't, because I'm in a counseling relationship. And I have to control my own anger in that situation, because I can't do anything about it except calm her down or make her feel comfortable or something. That's the type of thing that makes me angry.
Yeah.
Very angry. Yeah. I cannot tolerate violence, especially in a family relationship.
Anyway, okay, here's another example. Let's see if somebody else can pick up my message. Let's say your spouse has walked in the door. It could be husband or wife. No, I'm not stereotyping. Walked in the door and said to you, "Hey, my friend's coming over for dinner. Do you think there's enough for both of us?" Without any warning. Who wants to take that one?
Feel disappointed that you did this without letting me know ahead of time.
Yeah, because, hey, there may not be enough food, the house isn't clean enough, I didn't do the things I was supposed to do. I didn't know anybody was coming, forget it. Okay.
And more that could be to that is, I'm angry when you bring somebody to the house and ask me right in front of them, because it
can't blow up at you.
Because it feels like you don't respect me enough to give me a choice.
There you go.
Like you're not
That's
giving
great.
Me a choice.
Yeah. That's great. You don't respect me.
The other side of that, and I would tend to be mildly facetious, would be, well, I know we always have good food, and you are a darn good cook.
Boy,
and this is a friend who wouldn't care that our house is dirty anyway. You know?
That's a patronizing button.
But if you respected my feelings.
One of the psychologists that I work with, where we work with parents on some of these issues, has a big patronizing button. If I want to set her off, I know exactly what to say. Then we can launch into a role play meeting. That'll get him every time. I know, honey, it's okay. You have good food. You don't worry. The house is he doesn't mind a mess.
But I mind a mess.
Yeah, there you go. It goes back to the respect. Oh, let's see. Oops. Time. We out of time yet? We've got about 3 minutes?
4 or 10 minutes?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a hard one. You know, the iMessages, I think that's harder than listening sometimes to figure out, okay, what am I feeling? And, you know, if you're upset about something, rather than maybe deal with it right away, okay, because it's too boom, too immediate, you know, hang on to it and say, look, I'm upset about this. I can't talk about it right now. I'm going to come back to this, and I'm going to think about it. And go back and remember it and say, okay, I must have just Dave set up the whole. Then you go back and send that iMessage to home. Hopefully they'll listen to you. But it's hard. It doesn't always mean that they're going to change when you do it. Hmm. Any other thoughts, comments?
Sometimes I have a 4.5-year-old daughter, and sometimes I give myself a timeout. I say, I'm too angry to talk about this right now. I've got to go outside for a while. Of course, she cries the whole time because she feels like I'm deserting her when I do that. But
no, that's okay. That's okay because you're modeling control, first of all. And the other thing is you can use this with young kids. A lot of parents ask me, does it work with young kids? Not really. Not too much. Because what you have to do if you send an iMessage, is young kids are going to, you know, they're into the power thing. You know, like if you've got a little vase over there and you don't want them to touch that and then they go in, you know. It really bothers me when you put it on the vase because I'm afraid you might break it. So it's still there. You're not going to listen to it. That's when you have to get up and, you know, do the physical follow-up with an iMessage. But if you do that and you're consistent with it, just like anything else, if you're consistent with following whatever you do, it'll eventually get built into the kid and you won't have to say it anymore. But again, remember what you're doing with a younger child, a four-year-old, even, because a four-year-old is not going to respond to your iMessages. But what you're doing is modeling the technique. You're modeling a way of communicating that you want to see happen later on, and it works. Kids will start using it on you. We teach conflict resolution to kindergarten kids, and you wouldn't believe the stuff that they're coming up with. You know, you see them in the daycare, or you see them in the kindergarten class going, let's see, I know we both want to play with that toy, but I tell you what, why don't you take it for 5 minutes and then I'll take it for 5 minutes. Okay. Of course, they can't tell time. But they're modeling the technique.
Your 5 minutes is up.